Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The Andy J Podcast.
Hello, welcome to the latest Andy J podcast, the third in a week for us this week. Slightly changing things around from our usual one-hour guests once a week, and instead this is our third conversation of the week, the third just over half hour one. Day one, we had Stephanie Beatrice, star of Encanto and star of Brooklyn Nine-Nine. She's Rosa Diaz in that. I hope you've caught that amazing conversation. Star number two was Giovanna Fletcher, who is just wonderful. Really, really lovely lady. Please do check out that chat if you haven't heard it yet. And today's special guest is Elliot Cowan. Now, if you are not familiar with the name, let me tell you, Elliot has been in some absolutely incredible movies and starred alongside some massive Hollywood superstars, and he's going to lift the lid on what it's like working with them. He also, full disclosure, went to university with me. He was the year above me, but we were in a play together when we were performing at University of Birmingham. And sadly, although we've stayed in touch on kind of social media and you know, via phones, face to face, I haven't seen him for a couple of decades, which is really appalling. So it was lovely to be able to catch up with him and check in. And I hope that I remedy the fact that I haven't seen him face to face this year very, very soon. I hope that I get to catch up with him properly, because chatting to him reminded me of what a lovely man he is. I mean, that's one thing I have to say combines the three people we've chatted to and brought to you this week, is they're all just such great human beings. They really, they're living their life properly, and they're just putting out kindness. So yes, if there's any message from our three guests this week, it's just live your life and be good, be kind, be decent, care about other people, and go for it. Give out kindness. There you go. That's the little preachy moment for you. But listen, thank you so much for finding this show. I really appreciate it. Enjoy it. And I'll catch you at the end of this chat. Here is Elliot Cowan.
The Andy J Podcast.
Now, we are in our 2022 A Ghost Story special. We've heard from Stephanie, we've heard from Giovanna. Now it's time to hear from one of the leading men of the show, a man who's actually starred in so many movies. When I look at the list, it would take me, well, the entire time to go through it. But the hits include Alexander, Lost in Austin, Da Vinci's Demons, The Golden Compass. He has worked with so many phenomenal A-list stars. I intend to probe him a lot about those names. He also happens to be someone I was at university with, so this is a bit weird. I'm delighted to welcome Mr. Elliot Cowan. How are you doing, Elliot?
I'm very good, Andy. How are you?
Well,
lovely to be on the show.
It's great to have you. It's lovely to catch up. It's been something like 20 years, which I'm horrified by. How have you been?
Where's it all gone? Well, you know, in a word, I've been fine. It's been great 20 years. You know,
have
I can't believe
me?
It's flown by. I missed you very much. In fact, I've just been building, getting work and building my career as much as I can in order to have this moment with you on radio. And finally, our paths are crossing. It's been my super objective for the last two decades. And I can now retire, so thanks so much for this opportunity.
And rightly so, mate, rightly so. I mean, it's Cabin in the Woods time now. I mean, this is the pinnacle, right? You know, come on this show.
Well, I remember you doing doing this sort of thing back at university. You always had the energy and the kind of the good spirit and enthusiasm for this kind of thing. And, you know, you've achieved it. You were destined for this from the very beginning, probably more obviously than as aspiring actors. So congratulations to you, man.
Oh, well, bless your heart, mate. That's extremely kind of you to say. But when it comes to aspiring actors, you know, I have followed mm-hmm. your career with absolute joy. I mean, from day one, because you're the year above me, or you were the year above me at uni, although we had, yeah, the way things worked, we had lots of crossover. In fact, you and I actually performed a two-hander together, just the two of us, which was which was really nice. And it was good. It was very good, if I remember rightly, mainly thanks to you. I was just kind of sitting there, largely mute.
Well, we were all quite supportive of each other. you know, luckily, there were quite a few talented and passionate young people we were wanting involved. There were good comedy turns, dramatic turns. Everyone was trying a bit of everything. So, yeah, I only had that time. That was some of the three of the best years I had. So being there along the way.
Yeah, no, they were amazing. So my memory, Elliot, from the end of university in terms of your timeline was left university with a degree in drama and then moved pretty much straight into RADA, which you only do if you're a proper actor. I mean, they don't let anyone in. I should know.
Well, they didn't let me in the first time, may I add. It was definitely something I had to try out more than once. In fact, when I left school and I was auditioning for drama schools and for universities, there was a flat no. I didn't even get past the first round at RADA. I got into a couple of other schools and I got into universities. But in the end, I thought, you know, I'm going to go to uni first. I'm going to do this whole sort of smorgasbord of theatre stuff and then I'll home in on acting if I still love it. And that's what I did, you know, as I was leaving university and I started auditioning everywhere and RADA gave me a place and I took it, you know, I jumped at the chance. And that seemed to me by then the sort of the gateway into the career. It's not for everyone. A lot of people are more successful than me from coming at it from very strange angles, you know. But that was the kind of opportunity I had. And I worked really hard for 3 years with my fantastic year of colleagues. And then I got an agent and then it all started properly from then, you know. And that was nearly 20 years ago now.
Well, the floodgates opened, Elliot, after that. I mean, if I remember rightly, pretty much your first movie was Alexander. Now, just if people can't remember, I think it was 2004. Let me just explain who else was in Alexander alongside you. Oscar winner, Anthony Hopkins, right? I mean, that in itself, holy moly. But then you're also looking at Angelina Jolie, Rosario Dawson, Jared Leto, Colin Farrell. I mean, wow, how was that stepping out onto that? Because obviously you've got this great, but you're very athletic presence and, you know, it makes complete sense that you were kind of in this Greek god show. But how was it kind of stepping out there in that cool uniform under the hot sun with the pyramids and everything else that's going on with these icons of Hollywood?
Well, it was very strange and it was very exciting, needless to say. It was also very intimidating and, I mean, I went from this very sort of the antithesis to that. When I got told I finally got the job and I had to wait for weeks and weeks and weeks to find out that they were going to cast me as the young Ptolemy with Anthony Hopkins playing the older Ptolemy. And he was going through some decision-making process. It took him a long time. So I was only going to get the role if he took it. And I waited weeks and I was on tour with a play that took me up to Blackpool. And I literally came out of the show the Blackpool Grand into the rain and sleet on the coastline there. I could barely hear my agent down the line and she finally told me, you've got the role, they went for it, you're going to play this part. And I went from that kind of rather dismal British kind of like, you know, grassroots theatre stuff to going off to Morocco and to Thailand and to Ireland with this bunch of guys, the troop of lads that was helmed by Colin and Oliver Stone. And it was a mind bender because I knew I was going to play Anthony Hopkins's younger self, but I had never met him and I didn't get a chance to meet him until I'd done half of my scenes in Morocco. So I had done this weird thing where I had to sort of research him as a younger man, I decided, because he told me that he was going to use his voice and by my agent and so on. And then I just had to kind of do a version that would tally with him when he crops up in his 70s, a bit later on in the story as the narrator. And eventually I got to meet him. And as I said, it was all been cast on celluloid already. I couldn't really change anything, but he was the most gracious and enthusiastic guy that when Oliver finally told him, oh, you should listen to how Elliot's been doing you, I had to do an impression of Anthony to Anthony. And he very graciously just did that impression back to me as if I could correct him in the pronunciation of his own sort of intonation. So wow, it was a mind bender, but it was fun. And I hung out a lot with Jared. He and I were good mates on that. And we got to go camel riding with Angelina and her new son, Maddox. I remember on the beaches of Essaouira, and we flew around the world with Colin and Rosario, and Val Kilmer, who was a bit of a hero at the time. And, you know, we just had a real laugh. It was just amazing mind opener to me and the industry and what filming can be. I mean, I've rarely been in that environment again, but it was astounding to start my film career there and treasure all those memories and friends I've had since.
I mean, how much of it was, because I would have had terrible imposter syndrome in that situation. I would have just been like, what am I doing here? These are all really famous people. Man.
Well, the first scene I did was with Jared and Colin, just the three of us on these horses overlooking the this valley in Morocco, which was meant to be a part of Persia or Macedonia, I can't remember. And the Persian army were coming through and we were meant to be observing them and looking at this eagle that was flying around as an icon of Alexander's and spiritual icon. And we were sort of looking down. We had to follow this imaginary army because it was all going to be CGI'd later. And I'd never done anything like that at that stage of my career. I was 25. I'd just done some theatre and that was about it. And then I was trying to follow this imaginary army with my eyes into the blazing sun. And it's my first day and pretty much Oliver's first day shooting too, although he's very experienced. It's always a bit nerve-wracking. And, you know, he doesn't pull any punches. If you're not doing it right, he says, why aren't you doing it right? Just do it. All you're doing is moving your eyes at it. Why are you moving your head? And he called me out in a way that, you know, really put shivers at me. And I was like, right, I've really got to start concentrating or doing something right here. And I realized that actually I had to do so little because there was so much around me to tell the story that actually the discipline of film acting often is just to pare it down and to give something for the camera only. And because I had trained theatrically up to that point, I hadn't really cottoned onto that idea. And I just watched Jared, who was already then submerged in his roles, and Colin, who was just this dynamo of energy and charisma. And I just watched them do their stuff and sort of gently followed in the background just to pick up on what they were doing. And it was a great instruction. So by 6 months of that, once 6 months of that was over, I was pretty well indoctrinated into filming, I think.
That's incredible. How many of these people, because I've got to ask, Elliot, because people always ask me with the show, with all the celebrities that come on and so on, people always ask me like, oh, who have you stayed in touch with? And actually, there are always people that do stay in touch, regardless of where you are in your life and whatever. There are people that you continue to have a relationship with, you have dinner with, or you have a text chat with or whatever, that you just kind of do stay in touch with. I'm really hoping that you've got at least Jarrett you are still buddies with.
Yeah, well, he and I have kept in touch. And whenever I'm in LA, which hasn't been for a while now, I have kept in touch with him. To be fair, his recent supreme career lift, which I think started with Dallas Buyers Club, you know, has taken him into a different direction. But I used to see him play a lot with his band, 30 Seconds to Mars, and I got to know his brother in that as well. And when I was in LA, he took me into his studio and we hung and I listened to him cut his latest album, and we went hiking together with his huskies. He's got these amazing dogs that have almost as blue eyes as he has. And he was a very sweet sort of mentor of LA to me, actually. He lives a kind of clean life out there, but you know, he doesn't go out much. He works bloody hard, and he has just taken off. But I've also kept in touch with Colin a bit. You know, mates of mine have worked with him, and we also shared an accountant for a while, which was a bit surreal because we had very different accounting needs. But, you know, we kept in touch. And, you know, I haven't seen Angelina again. She and I didn't get onto Facebook together, unfortunately. But, you know, I trust she's doing well. And Tony and I haven't managed to rub shoulders again, unfortunately, because he was as sweet as, I mean, I sat in the chair next to him at work and, you know, I was talking about the plays I'd recently been in, which is just like so embarrassingly naive and gauche in front of Tony Hopkins, who, you know, famously kind of was the best thing on stage at the National back in the 70s. And but he was asking me, so what's good, Elliot? What should I go and see? What's top notch out there? He's doing great stuff. And I was like, well, you could go and see this production of Spring Awakening, which is pretty good. And they've got a Macbeth on at the Lyric, and I just did Camille. But he was so enthusiastic still about that community, even though I don't think he's probably feeling much of a part of it these days. But yeah, it was, they were generally particularly great people. And I will always cherish that. And also some of the crazy props that I've got. And the people I work with again, actually, since they're like who made the armor and made the weapons, they crop up on sci-fi movies weirdly. And you're given a laser gun by somebody who once gave you a short sword. But yeah, they were great times, Andy, I must say.
Hello, it's John Markar here from our sister podcast, The Driven Chat Podcast. Right now, you're listening to The Andy J Podcast, and it's quite good, isn't it? In fact, do me a favour, give it a little review, 5 stars, and wherever you're listening, hit that little subscribe or follow button, because it does help. See you around.
The Andy J Podcast.
Oh, I love it. Well, I mean, it's just so nice to hear that. And I have to ask about Angelina Jolie. You haven't stayed in touch with her, which is sad, but I like the fact that if you were to run into her, she would know your name and she would know who you are. That's kind of cool.
I think she might, because yeah. She was very... I had an embarrassing conversation with her, in as much that when we were in Pinewood together, I was trying to buy a flat at that time in my life for the first time. With the money I was earning, I thought, right, I'm going to put this into a property. And it was the best thing I ever did. But I ended up having this boring... I was talking to Angelina Jolie, for heaven's sake, and I was ended up talking to her about mortgages. Like, what is she going to know about mortgages? She probably has never needed one. And also, but she sweetly listened and said, yeah, it sounds like a good plan. I would... Anyway, she was sweet as you like. And like I say, she took us camel riding with her son one day. And that was fun, because Colin and Jared were on that ride, and that was just like watching two roosters fighting over a hen. It was just like, who can demonstrate their plume as much as possible? And being the reserved Englishman that I am, I just let them fight over each other over her. And when she arrived on set, there was a moment. We had all been in the desert for 3 weeks. No one had ever, we hadn't seen a woman for 3 weeks, and we were doing all this boot camp together. We were marching and riding and training with these Marines to get into an army sort of mentality. And then eventually she arrives out of this car, this minibus or something, for rehearsal or a costume fitting. And we all just get introduced to her. And we're all gobsmacked and dry mouthed as it is. And then we all get into our minibus and she drives off. And there's complete silence in the bus. No one says anything. But she's just been broken up from Billy Bob Thornton for about a year. She's talked about how she hasn't been with anyone since. So there's just silence in the bus. And then one guy just pipes up and says, we all think we're going to be the next one, don't we? And there was this kind of, you could tell a bunch of young men were just thinking, oh my God, she's the most beautiful woman I've ever seen. I wonder if there's a way.
Wow.
And we all cracked up and, you know, I can't say any of us were. So,
no, well, you were nearly there with the mortgage chat, but clearly not quite.
I've obviously got to up my game there. I changed my themes, and maybe I would have struck gold. But
if only you could have impressed her with the sizable deposit you could have put down, you know?
I know. It was probably a dinner bill for her, but, you know, I've improved my game a little bit since then, and, you know, struck gold as a result in my own life. So
you see, I love this, Elliot, because you have a history from what I've been reading outside of knowing you. You have a history of these kind of wonderful conversations with people that turn out to be remarkable. For example, there was a party you were at in LA where you were just chatting to someone who turned out to be Quincy Jones.
Oh, yes. I'm a very I guess I'm kind of naive in the way of the topper echelons of showbiz and celebrity. I've never had much of a kind of draw or pull or maybe an ability in it, because it's just not what got me into the game. And yes, I was at a party at Chateau Marmont, which is that sort of famous place on Sunset, I think, where we were having the after party for Alexander, and it was full of stars. Bono was there, Ed Norton was there, Woody Harrelson was there. And, you know, Christopher Lloyd was there. I bumped into her, chatted around. I sort of ogled at these people and thought, oh, my God, I can't believe I'm here. And I spoke to this very nice older gentleman who was very enamoured with the film. He could recognise me from the film, said it was brilliant seeing you guys. You're so passionate. You're so into it. And all this work is exemplary. And, you know, he was being very sweet about it. And I was like, oh, I was taking all this on and sort of revelling in it. And then just said, so what do you do? And he said, oh, I'm a music producer. I said, no kidding. What do you do? What sort of stuff? He said, you know, disco and funk, jazz. Well, I do it all. And I said, oh, anyone you've worked with? And he said, yeah, Michael Jackson and Bono over there I worked with. We did something. I was like, oh, right. So what's your name? And he said, Quincy Jones. And I was like, oh, my God, I am so, so sorry. I had no idea that Quincy Jones looked like you. I'm so sorry. I hadn't read enough, I've seen enough, whatever, inserts on CDs. And he was sweet and said, no, there's no reason why you should. Oh, and, you know, but I felt like a complete plonker.
I love it. You've got to have, I mean, look, everyone needs a dodgy Quincy Jones story. That's wonderful. That's just wonderful. Look, there's more that I want to come back to, Elliot, but we have to talk about what you're currently doing. 222, a ghost story, which of course, gracing the West End stage again, but a big role for you on the West End. This is really nice to see. And of course, you know, we've heard from two of your fellow cast members, Giovanna and Stephanie, who sang your praises, rightly so. But it's lovely to get people kind of scared on the edge of their seats again, isn't it?
Well, I must say, yes. I think that's part of the joy and part of the reason I snapped up the chance to do this. I mean, I remember as a kid, my parents took me to quite a bit of theatre, my local place, Mercury Theatre at Colchester, and up at the West End too. And my school would drag us along to whatever big production of something at the RSC or whatever. But two shows stick in my head as a kid. One was called The Ghost Train, which is kind of like a melodrama that was played at my local theatre. And it's a bit silly, I think, but it terrified the bejesus out of me. I remember about 7 or 8 years old, and I couldn't move for fear. It was very scary to me then. And then I went, of course, to The Woman in Black when I was 16.
I thought,
you know, having read the book, I thought that this is going to be quite scary, but it's theatre. What can theatre do? But again, just with two actors and a rocking chair, that had me up out of my seat. So I knew that theatre could do this to you, but perhaps I knew to a younger mind or more one susceptible to these kind of leaps of imagination. But somehow this play does do it in the same way. But it's so contemporary and so recognizable as a location. You think, well, how could I be scared by something that is obviously artificial on a stage and is so familiar and mundane in its domesticity? But it does do it. It's brilliantly constructed. It's brilliantly produced and directed, so it escalates the tension at the right moments and then releases at other moments with laughter and gags and humour and satire. But then it pulls you back in and gives you a huge jump left, right and centre. And I think it's true to theatre is the fact it just has a sublime, I don't want to say twist, but its revelation and its sort of resolution are so satisfying and so unforeseen. People just love going through it, even though it's scary, even if you might be terrified of these things. Like my other half, she really didn't want to come and see it, but she had to. And you know, it's a satisfying scare on
that.
All fronts. So, yeah, I'm very proud. I'm very excited. It's you know, I haven't been on the West End stage for 10 years now. I've done a few other theatres in the last decade, but the last time I was on stage was an Oscar Wilde. And that's brilliant because you don't see the laughs until you're in front of an audience. It's obviously skilled writing, but until you put that in front of an audience, you don't realize how successful it is as a play. And to be honest, I read this play knowing it was good, but until you do it in front of an audience, you don't realize how successful it is.
Yeah.
And to hear them coming at you with this, with the laughs, but also the jumps and yelps and the chatter, the between the scenes, like what's going on? Who did that? Oh my God, what's going on? Is so visceral, so present. I mean, it's almost like a panto in that respect. And for that reason, it's very festive, if you like. But it sort of is such a great return to being on the stage where you get, you know, we were used to. I was sort of like almost complacently used to applause, ovations, full theatres, people turning up at the theatre every day of the week. Now, to be on the stage and to be received so vocally and so responsively, in all sorts of, with all sorts of emotion, is such a reward after all these years, and particularly the last couple. I feel very honoured to be a part of it.
Yes, I imagine theatre in particular feels just that little bit more magic now because we were deprived it for so long.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was leaving the theatre last night, sort of anticipating or remembering I was working in the theatre, the West End, at this time of year, 10 years ago, and the sort of festive joy of being leaving a theatre at this, sort of 10 o'clock and walking through Soho and going, oh my God, Christmas is coming and I've just done a show. You know, that's all been pared down a bit. It's not quite the same buzz or population out there who are milling around the streets of Christmas. I mean, there are in the shops and so on, but even so, I'm just so excited to be back into those big rooms with a few hundred people wearing masks. Maybe there's enough space to just space yourself out to from one another if you're not sure. You know, we're being very diligent with our testing and we've now begun to have to be a little bit reticent about meeting people backstage because we don't want to get Omicron from a Sharpie if we're signing photograph. So apologies to anyone who's anticipating that. That might not be happening the day you come, because we're just getting a bit jumpy now as shows close left, right and center. But at the moment, we're hanging on, and it feels like we're giving something to people that they need more than ever. And I hope that we can continue to do that right until the close of our run, because people want to come, and to this play as well. I think people really want to come. It would be just such a shame if some kind of logistical or political decision gets in the way of that.
Yes, I really hope that doesn't happen. That would be rubbish. So yeah. fingers crossed,
yeah.
mate. What can you say? A couple more from me, Elliot, and then I'll let you go, because I know you've got a busy old day ahead. But let's talk about what comes next for 2022, because Foundation on Apple TV has just come out now. People can catch that. This is the thing about streaming services. Things come out new, but they're always new when you find them. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
So
yeah.
That's something that's now on my chart of, oh, okay, Elliot's in Foundation, fantastic. I'm going to see that now. That's something I'm going to come to and I'm really excited by. So that that sustained you during lockdown. You were filming that and very involved in that. Now, of course, as we enter 2022, how does it work for you? Have you got a roadmap of what's happening this year, or is it finish 2022 and then see what happens?
Well, I don't think anyone has a roadmap currently. And I speak to my agent about this occasionally, and the feeling is that even the top names who, I mean, I'm sure are the people who find out first about what they're doing next year or years to come, and also get things green lit and happening. I think even those guys are scratching their heads or crossing their fingers as to what might come next year. Every spring seems to be like a new dawn at the moment, with new hopes for how far ahead of this virus we can get. And, you know, productions do get halted by these things, and insurance gets halted by the prognosis. So I don't currently really know what I'm doing next year beyond this play. I find that there's a lot of work going on. You know, the country is burgeoning with new investment and new TV opportunities, or, the studios being built. Money is coming over here from other countries to exploit our talent and our tax breaks, no doubt. And I know it's there, and it will come to me as and when I get down to starting to audition again. But apart from having been in The Crown just recently before I've done this play, which will come out next year,
nice.
I don't really know. So I've got things in my own mind that I'd like to do, but it's a little bit more hand-to-mouth, or sort of unpredictable than it's ever been, I have to say. I mean, like all freelancers, anything in entertainment or hospitality or whatever, I would say right now it's just more shaky than ever. And I count myself as being very lucky these last 20 years of kind of always knowing I'll be okay, touch wood.
Yeah,
it's just not that clear anymore. So if there are other actors listening to this ever and they feel a little bit sort of excluded and in the cold, and hearing another actor talk about their work sonorously like this is sometimes a bit galling. I really get that. It's, you know, on Facebook or Instagram, seeing other people bounce around the world seemingly untouched by the environment that we are all working in now, I would say, yeah, I know exactly what you're going through. I'm having a funny 5 minutes of opportunity right now, which I'm very grateful for, but God knows next year. Fingers crossed, and hopefully I can build on this, and we can all build on this and be reborn again.
Yes, you certainly deserve it, mate. You've got the talent in abundance. So I sincerely hope that it's a terrific one for the future for you, because, you know, I'd love to see you soaring as you deserve to be, because it's it'd be lovely to see. Elliot, what a pleasure. It's so nice to chat.
Yeah.
Really nice to catch up with you. It's horrible how long it's been. Look, I'm provided theatres are open, I'll be there on the 7th, which is the Friday,
right.
The first Friday, I think, in January. So if you get a chance, I'd love to say hello. No pressure at all.
Yeah, but I will. I'll come by.
You might be dashing off, but and no Sharpies. I've taken notes.
Well, it's generally outside standing on the cobbles of Soho. It feels okay. You know, it's just when you have to get up and close and people are just, it's quite busy around the stage door. Those gals and James, they pull in quite a crowd, an enthusiastic bunch.
Good stuff, mate. Look, thank you. I've really enjoyed it. And it's lovely to connect again.
Well, it's nice of you to be so enthusiastic, Andy. I mean, you're always like that. You always have been like that in your nature. But to direct it towards me and what, you know, I try and put together as a profile and a career, it's nice to have just an advocate there just shouting a little bit for on my behalf, because compared to some others, it doesn't happen as often as it might. But I appreciate that you put in the time to do that today.
Oh, mate, it's a privilege, and I'm always on your side, my friend. So anything I can do to help. If you ever need, you know, if you're like, Andy, listen, there's this thing that I'm doing, and I could do with a bit of a lift on it, and I can help, just tell me, and it's done. It's done.
Cheers. That's very good to hear, and a lovely Christmas present. So thank you very much.
It's a joy, man. Have a great one.
You too, mate. Thanks so much.
Take good care. See you, mate. Bye-bye.
Bye now.
The Andy J Podcast. What a guy. Some amazing stories from inside Hollywood. And I'm so chuffed that he shared them with us. You know, it's kind of like the kind of thing you'd hear him say if you were having a private chat with him on a dinner party or something. I'm amazed that he was prepared to say those incredible tales for us on the show today. So what a treat. Lovely catching up with Elliot. He's just brilliant. Let me tell you, normal service resumes on the Andy J Podcast from next week. We'll be back to our 1 hour specials per guest. And hopefully just bringing you out one conversation per week for the foreseeable. Next week is an incredible conversation. Another man who you may not have heard of, but who has the most incredible story to tell. He's now an author. His name's Des Powell. And he was a soldier, a very significant soldier. And he has the most incredible story to share behind enemy lines. It's a listen. We recorded it towards the end of 2021. And it's one of those conversations where we didn't want to bring it out over the festive period, because that would have been, you know, people are in certain mindsets over the festive period. And because it's a really intense conversation, we thought it was best to hold it till we started this year. And, you know, we put out a show to help people's mental health, for example, over Christmas and so on. We didn't think a sort of really intense chat about enemy fighting and so on would be appropriate. However, I can't wait for you to hear this. Des was amazing company. He's lived the most extraordinary life. And you'll hear all about his incredible exploits next week. So for now, walk tall, be kind, and thank you very much for your company. I really appreciate it. Tell your friends about the show. Let's get the numbers up. Let's get as many people listening to this show as we possibly can. It's doing well, but you can always do better. So share it out, my friends. Take it easy, and I'll catch you on the flip side. Bye-bye.
The Andy J Podcast.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.